Hello, and welcome to Living with Dying, the podcast where we try to break the taboos around death and dying and learn to talk about it. Thank you if you've been listening since the beginning, and if you have, you'll know we've covered so many aspects of death and dying, from what it's actually like to die, to how it feels to lose your nearest and dearest, the different ways grief can strike, the different ways we cope or don't with loss, how counselling can help, what part faith can play, how to help others going through grief, and how to pick up the pieces and rebuild a life after a big loss. So today I've come to Lodge Brothers in Datchet to talk to funeral director Cressida Harris. Cressida, hello, thank you for joining us. We've got a lot to talk about, but I quite like to say to start with that I was a bit surprised on meeting you.
Thank you.
You're not exactly the stereotypical funeral director I'd imagined.
No, I think the stereotype of a funeral director is pale, grey and stale, maybe a little bit. And I'm definitely not pale. Well, I might be a bit pale, but I'm not grey. I have red curly hair and I'm a female and I am generally quite young to work within the funeral business as well, being only 31. So that's a little bit sometimes surprising for people.
So what brought you into this field in the first place?
So Lodge Brothers is part of my family history. It's my family company and I am the eighth generation. So we have been around for 243 years. I hope that's the correct number. And we started off in 1780. So I've really been part of the family business for my whole life. My mother, who's recently retired, was one of the directors, and my uncle is still currently working within the business. So I've always known about it. I wouldn't say it's something that you strive for as a child, but I have always had a very caring nature, and I've always been drawn to working with people and being in a sort of supportive role. And actually what was putting me off was the concept of the death and dying. And I thought, oh, it must be a really depressing job to work in. And I have been proved wrong multiple times. It's been a fantastic opportunity to work within the business. And I really enjoy supporting the families. No two families are the same. And it's been really interesting kind of seeing the different perspectives that people have for the different types of funerals. And I get to work with like-minded individuals, because what's been really humbling is the company is filled with people who genuinely care. Every single person, from the people in the mortuary dressing the deceased and putting them into the clothes and doing their best, which is not always very easy considering the condition sometimes the deceased are in, to the workshop and making sure that the coffin is absolutely symmetrical at every single point and the lining is perfect, to the guys, making sure that the vehicles are to the best standard and working together on the team on the day to make sure that everything that's been handled with the arrangers is delivered, to the ladies and gents on the shop floor, working, with the people who are at their worst. It's everybody is singing from the same hymn sheet, and that's been a really humbling environment to work in.
You make it sound as if you're across all aspects of the business. Are you very hands-on in all those areas?
I'm not hands-on in all of those areas. I definitely know my lane, but because of the nature of the business, you have to have an understanding of how all the different departments fit together, so that when we're speaking to our families, we can manage their expectations regarding the time frames that they might be wanting us to work towards. So I'm not directly involved with them, but I have to have a good understanding. And the business has only got 170 people in it. So it's a big family business, but it's not a huge corporate business that you don't talk to all these different departments, essentially.
And have your views on death and dying and your feelings changed?
I'm very comfortable talking about death and dying. My mum worked in the business for 30 years and she always brought a real reality to life because of that, I think. That I didn't truly accept or understand until working within it. So I think it really only cemented what I already thought, was that life is beautiful and that you've got to live it. You never know when your card is going to be dealt. And I think to not have any, well, to try and not have any regrets. But I think what I have learned from working within the business is how important it is to mark someone's death. And I think there is, that's what's been a real realization, I think, from COVID and working in an environment where, and I joined just after the real initial peak. So I wasn't in the real depths of it, where it was just really difficult for the business to and the people working within the business to kind of manage the family's expectations, and changes were happening all the time. But people weren't grieving because they couldn't go to the funerals. And I think now seeing people coming back to us who are sadly have lost maybe another member of their family who can now have a funeral, they have said it, you know, it just didn't seem real at the time because we couldn't have the people that we were there. So I think what funerals has shown is that it's a, you know, it's a real important part of somebody's life, not only for the person who's died, but also the people left behind, because it's that person is no longer there anymore, and that's going to have an impact on them.
So what kind of impact do you think our not talking about death and dying basically has on all of us, on society?
I think by not talking about it, we become fearful of it. And I think even, I hear it regularly with my friends when somebody has died that they know. And, you know, as a friend, you're trying to reach out to another friend. It's like, I don't know how to approach them, or I don't know what to say. Like, I haven't seen them since, you know, this person has passed away in their life. What do I say? It's just like, just address it. Just say to them, actually, by not recognizing it, it's like it never happened, which is almost more disrespectful to the person who's grieving. There's no right or wrong. Actually, end of the day, we're all humans trying to do the best we can do. And also the bereaved person, we all grieve in very different ways. So what is right for one person might not be right for another person. But I think if you can go approach it with good intent and some compassion, it's rarely probably going to be received wrong. I think you just might not get the reaction that you think that you might get. And I think that's what, as a, you know, we get that all the time, is you approach one family and one family might need a bit more support and wants to talk about their loved one, and other people are completely shut off and it's very matter of fact and they don't want any nonsense. You know, and if you approach them with the wrong behaviour, you'll know about it, but it's how you learn, right?
So you have to pick up from the customers.
Yes.
What they're like.
I think definitely, I think, you know, it's a people's job, and I think reading the behaviour and the emotion that they're putting out to you is really important. But it's just creating, we just try to create a safe space. You know, it's a safe space to come in here and be sad, or to laugh, or to share what you're feeling. You know, there might be anger that be being portrayed. So it's being able just to be accepting of whatever emotion is being put out at that point of view. And I think that stems to when you're talking to anybody who's bereaved and dealing with them. You know, they're going to have good days and bad days, and throughout their life they're always going to remember that person. So it might be 10 years later and all of a sudden something happens in their life, or they're around something and they remember that person. And it's, I think, as the friend or the person comforting the bereaved, it's just recognizing it and just accepting it, and then you can move on.
I'd like to talk to you about what actually happens and what we are supposed to do when somebody dies, because I think there's quite a lot of confusion around that. And I did read somewhere recently something that echoed an experience of mine when I went to register my aunt's death many years ago now, and then went to a local funeral director's. And the thought of suddenly being faced with having to choose a coffin, of all things, you know, being given a catalogue, being told this is what you have to do, when you're absolutely not in the right place to do that because you've just lost somebody, is horrendous. Is that the kind of thing that still happens today, or is it handled rather more sensitively, would you say?
I would say it's hopefully handled more sensitively. I think at the end of the day, there's certain things that have to occur first, but it's all about supporting the family and the person who's looking at you, and tailoring it to where they are at what stage. There's no right or wrong in the time frame of how things need to be done. And certain people want things to be done very quickly. Other people just need the time. Obviously, our job as professionals is to try and guide them through this time, and also keep in mind the dignity of their loved one, that their loved one does need to be laid to rest. So, we do get families that can take a very long time on taking choices, which causes a number of challenges, not just for them, but for us internally as well. It's just trying to support them. But our job is to tell them, these are all your options. You tell me what what your loved one might have wanted or may have mentioned. Try and get a feel for who that person was. And then letting them say, well, this is what you can have available to you. You decide what's best for you and what you think your loved one would have wanted.
So can we talk now about the process then? So again, I suppose this is partly due to personal circumstances. I do think it's quite hard sometimes if somebody dies suddenly or in the middle of the night or maybe away from home in a hotel or something. What is it you have to do, and in what order are you supposed to do it?
Well, there's not an exact answer to that because it does depend on where the person has died. But generally, deaths are going to be put in two categories of being expected or unexpected. So, if it's an unexpected death, they're obviously a lot more traumatic, or they can be a lot more traumatic because that person, you weren't expecting them to be taken from you. So, in those instances, the coroner is involved. But again, depending on where you are in the country, will depend on the process of what's involved. So counties can have a slightly different, each county can vary. So Berkshire and Surrey vary slightly. So the police have to be informed, and somebody needs to come and verify that that person has died, which can be would be generally the paramedics, because if someone's just dropped down dead unexpectedly, the paramedics will are going to be called. If somebody's with them, and then the police will also generally turn up, or at least be informed, who then inform the coroner. And the coroners work with funeral directors. Each coroner in each area will have a different funeral directors appointed to them, and it will be the job of that funeral directors to take that person to the desired location, depending on the circumstances of that person's death.
So in that case, the bereaved person, if there is someone there, as you said, doesn't really have to do anything because it's taken out of their hands.
Really, yes. They just obviously will just make the initial call to say to the emergency services to say this has happened, and they will call the corresponding emergency services depending on the situation that they're in. But no funeral directors can remove anybody until somebody of a healthcare professional has ascertained that this person has officially died. So that's the first step one. And then the coroners, will have to carry out an investigation. And the investigation, there'll be three outcomes. It could be that there is no further need for the coroner's involvement. It might be that they need to carry out a post-mortem, and then to ascertain why the person died. And then they might decide to carry out an inquest, and further investigation might go on. And again, that might have certain circumstances around outcomes, sorry, around that. So it could be on that case that the coroner says, well, this person can be laid to rest, but they can only be buried. Or they might say that, they can have a burial or cremation. So again,
Why would they say that?
I guess in case they need to exhume the body and they need to have further evidence taken from the deceased. So again, it just depends on the circuit, that's a variety of different circumstances for that. The other coin is the expected death, which follows again a bit more of an easier process, but again, depending on whether or not the person dies within their own home or a nursing home to a hospital, will have a slightly diff follow a slightly different path as well. But again, somebody needs to come out and verify that that person has died.
So if somebody dies in their sleep,
Yeah.
what are you supposed to do?
So if somebody dies in their sleep, and let's say they're the person who's living in their ho somebody else living in their home finds them, they would most likely call the ambulance service, and they will announce that they have passed. If not, they might call the doctor if they were palliative and they were expecting them to die. So somebody will need to verify it. Once they're verified, they will then say to them that you need to generally appoint a funeral directors. You don't have to appoint a funeral directors in the UK, but we are there to make it easier, because we have certain facilities to be able to look after your loved one. Otherwise, you've got to organise that yourself.
How do you do that?
Well, I would not know. I would just say it's best, probably easier to appoint appoint the funeral director. So that's generally the first thing that you're going to have to do, is all of a sudden you're going to have to think of a funeral directors and look for one. And there are a lot of us on around and offering different types of services. So one of the best things that people can do is, if they know that they are going to be needing the services of a funeral director, is to know who they're going to call when the time comes, because most people do die at night. And the last thing you want to be doing at 2 o'clock in the morning is looking to try and find someone to look after your loved one. So the funeral directors will come, they will bring their loved one into their care, and they will take them to their local mortuary. And at Lodge Brothers, a majority of our branches have an on-site mortuary, so they're kept local to where they live. And then the arranger the next day in the branch, when they open up, if it's that person died at night, will give the family a ring and just answer any immediate questions that they might have.
So, is there any time frame involved in that? I mean, say, for example, somebody dies at home at 2 o'clock in the morning. Are you supposed to ring somebody immediately? And if you are, is it the funeral director, or is it, you've talked about the doctor and the paramedic, but presumably you can't ring a funeral director until you've had the death verified by one of the other officials. So, first port of call is a medical person of some kind.
Correct,
Right.
yeah.
Okay. And then do you need to phone the funeral director at 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning, or do you wait till the next day?
Again, that's up to you. If the death is expected, the doctor will verify, and families can just take their time. There is no rush. I think generally it will depend on, again, the circumstances and how comfortable the relatives feel. Some people just need that time. Others become quite scared because it's not something they would have probably have seen before, and they're not sure what to expect. So I think generally they probably would call the funeral directors quite quickly, but there is not really a major time frame. It's just when you're ready. But the funeral directors, again, will generally give a time frame of, we'll be there within 2 hours, and so there will be a bit of a lag, shall we say, of when you make the call to when the funeral directors turn up.
So, do you have somebody on call all through the night?
Correct.
You
Yeah.
do, gosh.
Yeah. We work 24/7, 365 days of the year.
Of course, in the old days, well, I say the old days, but I think in certain societies as well, people keep the body, don't they, and invite friends and family around. Does that still happen?
Yes, I wouldn't necessarily say they keep the body at the point of death, but we definitely can facilitate take homes, which is when the deceased goes home and they get brought back into their house, and into their coffin, but get placed, and they generally are in their coffin, and then the families can and friends can come view. And you get quite a lot of that with Catholic funerals. The Irish are very renowned for having a take home. So that is something that does and still occurs.
I hadn't heard that expression, take home.
Yeah, so it's a take home. And then a take in is when you take somebody into church. So again, the Catholic faith can sometimes request to have the deceased brought to church the day before the funeral, and they spend the night in the church.
Well, that seems like a good opportunity to talk about different faiths and what the different customs are. Have you said enough about the Catholic faith, or is there any, are there any other rituals that would be interesting to learn about?
That probably is the most interesting one for regarding the Catholic faith. Again, every depending on how strong their faith is will depend on sort of the concept of what type of service they have and whether or not it's a full Catholic mass, which can take, an hour and a half to maybe a shortened version of an hour. They do like to have sort of rosary beads, and often people who are Catholic will have those in their place in their hands, and place a Bible on top of the coffin when they are brought into church is generally quite usual, as well as they like to have a crucifix placed on their coffin lid again, which funeral directors can supply for them.
And there are some faiths who like to do things quickly, aren't there? I gather the Jewish faith is one of those.
And Muslims as well within their culture, and they in this country, if you are of that faith, those requirements can be achieved from the aspect of registering the death, because we as funeral directors, we can't carry out a funeral until you've registered, because we need the certificate from the registrar. So if you are of those faiths, you generally get an appointment quicker because of it, so that that paperwork can occur. It does seem though that those faiths often go directly to their point of worship to arrange their funerals, and they generally take care of the whole thing for them and work with the speed that they are requ that is required
So you mean they
generally.
don't involve as a funeral director at all?
Not necessarily one that's like on the high street, so they have kind of funeral directors within their own places of worship that do that carry everything out for them, really. We know we have carried out Muslim funerals, and that Muslims like to be buried, and we have worked with other cultures, but they do, and we have taken them to their points of worship, but they generally do stay within their own remit.
And can we talk a bit about traditions? I mean, I don't know whether I'm right in saying the Victorians have sort of set the trend for our funerals today. Is that correct, or is that?
Well, I think there's definitely a sense of tradition which has stemmed from the Victorians. I know from our own perspective, we wear very traditional mourning apparel, and that's sort of very similar to what the Victorians would have worn. And you see a lot of funeral directors kind of looking very similar to a certain degree in the top, in the tails and the top hat. Women funeral directors, I get told that I have to keep my hat on the whole time, whereas if you watch a man, they'll take their hat off at certain points. And I asked the question once, why is that? And the answer was that in the Victorian time, ladies didn't remove their hat because their hair was pinned to the hat and it would mess it up, basically. And so that's why when if I'm conducting a funeral, my hat stays on the whole time. So even to the point where if another funeral passes in the hearse, the gentleman in my hearse on the limousines will take the hat off as a sign of respect, but I don't. I just bow my head because my hat stays on.
That's fascinating, and it
Unless
makes
it's
sense.
windy, of course, then it flies off, which it has done.
You've had that happen, have you? You've lost your hat in the
Yeah,
wind.
I have, yeah.
Any other traditions that you know date back to those days, apart from the dress that you've talked about?
The concept of our vehicles has changed, whereas you do see sometimes people using having a horse-drawn hearse, and that would have been the traditional way.
So that brings me on to what was going to be my next question about green funerals. How have they changed, and what are the kinds of different things you can offer today in terms of natural burials?
I think natural burials are there's becoming maybe there's a feel a sense that people are becoming a bit more aware of green funerals, and I think from a variety of different reasons, not just because of the impact that it has on the environment, but I think the feel of them as well. When you have a burial in a natural burial ground, it can be very peaceful. It can also be the opposite in this country because we are not graced with beautiful weather. You can be standing round graves and have burials in the pouring rain, and it reflects the mood and what everybody is feeling. So, that's the challenge with them. I wonder if you were to look at other countries, would burials be more popular because they're guaranteed better weather for a start? We are also running out of burial grounds anyway, and cremations are still very much the norm or more popular. But natural burial grounds, they have certain provisions, so you can't be embalmed, for example, because of, from the sustainability point of view, as the body would go breaks down to its natural elements, you can't have formaldehyde going into the soil. So yeah, and also some things like natural burial grounds, so you can only be dressed in natural clothes or have a shroud around you. So that can be sometimes a bit difficult for families as well.
But it is all fascinating, and it's all stuff that's really behind closed doors, isn't it? And I think that's why you agreed to talk to me, isn't it, really? Because you want the subject opened up so that we talk more about it.
I think definitely. I think unfortunately, it's the sad reality of life that we can't live forever, or our physical bodies can't live on forever. And I think there's a lot of stigmatism around it, and people are fearful of it. But unfortunately, at some point, you will know somebody who's going to die. You'll be grieving somebody, and you may even have to arrange their funeral, and that is incredibly distressing. But it doesn't have to be, and there are, and I think by trying to understand and accept that that will happen might just allow you to get certain parameters in place, whether or not it's from a practical point of view, a financial point of view, an emotional point of view. I think we sometimes stop ourselves from asking any questions because we might be frightened or fearful of upsetting someone, or that we're not sure how to approach it. But actually, the person who you might be asking might actually want to talk about it, and they might be just worried about upsetting you. I know that's not always the case, and we do hear families say, oh, they tried to speak about it, but they just weren't having any of it. Mum wasn't having any of it, and okay, because I think we've, that our certain generations, you just didn't talk about it, and you're not going to change that in one conversation. But what we can do is start changing things now for future generations, so that if you know that once. If you have children, you can make it easier for them. You can write down your wishes, but you can talk about it, and you can talk about it quite practically, and talk about it before it's on the horizon takes the emotion out of it. And there is no right or wrong way about how to do a funeral. They can be as weird and as wacky and as wonderful as you want. They can also be traditional and have a lot of classical music and have some, really nice poems and nice things about you. But you can also have dance music and drum and bass and dove release and all these, and motorcycle processions and all these other things to reflect the person who has died and what their legacy is and what they stood for. It doesn't have to be what you think it has to be.
Cressida Harris, thank you very much for talking to me. Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.